and welcome back to Matt and Dwight Just Might, a podcast about two Midwest-based touring comedians who are figuring their way through life, stolen Wi-Fi.
That's it, man. You stay on the stolen Wi-Fi tip, and I.
Okay, I was gonna add something buried in there, but nothing came to me because I'm very tired. I've driven a lot the last few days, and frequent mileage. How about that? Frequent mileage, both in the ground and in the air. That's what we'd be staying on.
I dig that. You're at yet for the third episode in a row, another public Wi-Fi establishment in their parking lot.
I am. I'm in a popular coffee chain in their parking lot, hiding in my car. And I'm in Fort Collins, Colorado. I have all my window shades in and my car running with the AC on because it's crazy just like how different 2 weeks is. Because I hit Fort Collins on my way out to the West Coast and to do Alaska, and it was snowing like crazy. I actually had to just wait in Laramie, Wyoming for like an hour and a half for them to reopen the interstates. Like that's how much it was snowing and how crazy cold wintry it was. Yeah. And then rolling back through now, it's just like, no, it's in the 80s.
That is the most Midwest shit too, because I know you're no longer connected because you've been all over the place for the last 3 weeks, but we had like thunderstorms and then it was like chilly for a day. And now it's like 72 and perfect for like all week. And then it'll probably drop again this weekend. But when you come up in the Midwest, you're used to that shit.
That's true. But also, I'm older than you, but I think you're probably old enough to remember it used to not be this extreme. We used to have like what they would call Indian summer, which was like a fake out like spring that would happen and then it would get winter again. You know, there'd be like a week or so of like, oh, things are happening and it's warming up, and then it was like a weird little lapse in winter essentially, and then it would be winter again for a couple of weeks and then the real spring would happen, you know. But it feels like it has been more chaotic and crazy the last, I don't know, 15 years at least, you know. Global if only there was like some sort of real scientific no, it can't be that. It has to be something else. I think it's too many drag readings to kids. I mean, drag story hours, you know, that's what it is.
It starts with the space lasers and then you creep into the drag readings at brunch. You're trying to have endless mimosas with your family and then
with your kids.
When you're trying to get lit up on a Saturday 11 p.m. late brunch with your children, and in walk four beautiful looking drag queens, and it just has to be the reason that we have these wild influxes in weather.
Yeah,
I see no other reason.
It's all absolutely related, of course, you know.
Yeah, well, we took last week off. So
we did. I was in Alaska and on the vacation portion of my Alaska trip with Denise. And so I wanted to just be fully, you know, present and committed to vacation time, you know? So we took last week off, but we've got a lot of catching up to do. What have you been up to? What shows have you been doing since last time that we talked on the podcast?
Well, besides missing you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Denise, really is driving a wedge between us, but we'll talk off air about that.
Okay.
I did Wiley's, April Fool's weekend, basically. So three shows at Wiley's in Dayton. It's just a club that does not like to police. I did okay on ticket sales, but my Friday show, and it starts at like 7:30. It's pretty early show, only one show, but just rowdy. And it's another thing where I was like, I should have taped this because I could be going viral right now. Just like putting down, I was doing my master bedroom bit, and a guy just yells, "It's my birthday." So I made fun of him, and then they chirped up again. They're like, "What do you call it then?" I was like, "If you let me tell the fucking joke."
Yeah.
But you know, some clubs are just like that. They're not gonna police. They're gonna keep selling them buckets of beer and oversized margaritas. And then the weather was pretty shitty, so I didn't get to do much. Went to Jungle Gyms on Saturday with Dyke Michaels, who I brought to feature. Killed some time at that mega grocery store, and then two shows on Saturday. It was cool. But yeah, it's the yearly Wiley's Dayton, Ohio trip. Dayton is a very sad place. I don't know if you guys know this.
It is, but I really like Dayton, and I really like Wiley's, and I think I have an emotional attachment to it because it is the first club that I ever headlined. I think even before I even headlined the Attic, I co-headlined Wiley's with Ben Moore and Tom Takkar. The three of us co-headlined it.
Man,
did like what they would call a split feature,
aka weekend, triple feature,
triple feature weekend or whatever. But for me, it was a big deal because we did do the thing where we rotated. So there was one of the shows that I closed, you know, which was the first time I ever got to do that, and particularly going up after Tom and Ben, who weren't like. They had both started like a year before I did, but both were very good, you know, particularly at that point. They both had figured it out. And Ben, I guess, had started a couple years before because he's the weird guy that started doing stand-up before there was a club in Bloomington.
Right.
He was, you know, renting out a venue and putting on his own stand-up shows and just kind of like really aggressively getting after it beforehand. But yeah, it was so I love Wiley's, and I agree. I wish they would police more, but I also know they just don't have the staff to police. I mean, it's hanging on by a thread, and I love Erica and the staff and the people who do show up to kind of keep this thing alive.
It's great. I mean, it's you just like going in, you know what to expect,
right? And exactly.
Like, especially when you're on stage, you're like, I need to handle this in the moment. It really tests like how you deal with different types of disruption during the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, you got the people that are just talking, but like in the cheering alongside with you way.
Yeah.
But it's still disruptive to everyone around them.
Yeah. And
your flow. And it's like everyone else that bought tickets. And so you kind of want to deal with it in the, like, with oven mitts on. It's like, there's a lot of that. There's no real like aggression, but I agree with what you said, man. That's a great place. Erica, it's literally Erica checking people in, seating them, running their food and drinks,
and booking the club.
And
Erica's not the owner, you know. Erica's just has the same sort of love for that place, and you know, and she has a whole ass regular job during the day that makes bills. And so, it is one of those things that I still book it every year because I never know if it's going to be the last year. And then, you know, also there is the rumor. I don't know if this is rumor. This might be straight up truth. But Dave Chappelle bought that building. And so once
I thought that got canceled, but I'm not sure.
I thought that him making the club in his own hometown of Youngstown or Yellow, whatever, Wood or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I thought that got canceled, him building a club there. And so then the scuttle that I heard was that he bought the building that Wiley's is in. And so everyone's assumption is because Dayton is the closest city to where he lives that actually has, you know, has any sort of scene whatsoever, is that the assumption is then like when the Wiley's lease runs out, the current owner's lease with the building runs out, that Chappelle's going to kick them out essentially and just put in his own club.
That feels very Chappelle-y.
Yeah. Or maybe buy Wiley's off of them. Maybe he'll buy the name, you know, and of the club. I mean, it is historic. It is the oldest comedy club in the state of Ohio. And
yeah,
he did play there coming up, you know. I mean, he started obviously doing comedy in DC, not Ohio, but they have headshots of him when he was first starting headlining.
Right.
You know, it was a place he played. So who knows what the future is going to be there. But either way, if Chappelle owns Wiley's or he puts his own comedy club in there, I'm sure I'm not going to be headlining it. So I was like, all right, we get one more year. We get one more weekend in before that goes away.
Oh, man. You send the angry email. I've headlined this venue six years in a row. Killing Them Softly wasn't that good.
Just because you've expanded the seating to 600 doesn't mean there's no reason that I shouldn't still headline it.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny. But yeah, it was fun. And then, so I did a commercial.
Nice.
In French Lick, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
Home of Larry Bird. For Visit Indiana, I was doing some hot lines, like I'm in. That was my big line. That was my moment.
Uh-huh.
Should be out next month, so keep your eyes to cable television. If you're listening to this in the immediate tri-state area.
Now, how many guesses do I get to guess what you were responding to with "I'm in"?
One. It should be one. Pretty. Yeah, it should be pretty obvious.
Okay. All right. It's gonna be your partner. Are you responding to whoever's playing your wife or girlfriend? Can I get some hints?
Yeah. So the theme of the shoot is they're shooting at several locations around Indiana, and they're gonna mash them up. So right. I feel like I'm just gonna tell you what I'm responding.
No, no,
to.
No. Okay. No. I want to guess. All right. So it's just you. So you're not. Are you just responding to the camera? You're not responding to another actor.
We did both. So we did both. A lot okay. of takes of me looking directly in the lens of the camera and mm-hmm. responding to my partner.
Okay. All right. My guess is going to be your partner is going to say something about like Indiana has so many great places to do butt stuff. And then you go, "I'm in."
And I'm like, "I'm in." They're like, "Can you make your voice a little bit more raspy and yeah. like wink?"
Yeah.
"I'm in."
Is that it? Was am I close? Was am I accurate? Is that what it was?
I don't like. I'm not gonna like disqualify you,
okay?
Because it was a shoot to highlight many locations mm-hmm. where I'm sure you could do a lot of butt stuff.
Okay, it's good.
Like,
all right.
So it would go to someone at the like racetrack.
Uh-huh. Great like, place. You can put some wagers down on your butt stuff.
On your say, "Hey, you want to come to the Indy 500?" And that would come to me and I'd be like, "I'm in." But with like, you know, the implication of butt yeah, stuff.
You're holding lube when you say "I'm in."
Yeah. it was so these commercial shoots are so long, it's like hurry up and wait.
Yeah.
And it's just them setting up the lighting and cameras, and there was for half the day we were under a tornado watch. And so we finally wrapped and I was like, I thought I was going to have to get a hotel in French Lick because the weather was so bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just radar watching and there was like a little window at like 5 p.m. where if I could just shoot the gap, I could like make it home alive. Because the weather in Indianapolis wasn't too bad. And it's only, you know, a 2-hour, 20-minute drive. So I got my 2012 Toyota Prius and at 5 o'clock hit the road and then mm-hmm. it's just back roads for like 45 minutes
yeah.
and it is so windy. I think that it's gonna lift my baby off of the fucking gravel road. Like I'm like my phone's like, if you see a dark swirling cloud, take shelter. And on my left and right there's no there's not even like barns or houses, it's just fields and fields and fields. I'm like, I have fucked up for this this shoot about butt stuff, but the now show must go on.
The show must go on. That's how that's show business,
the
baby.
Show business, baby.
Now you are an Indiana born and raised fella, so you know if it came down to it in that situation, what you should do, right? If a tornado is coming, do you know this? Like if you're just in an open field area,
no.
There should be drainage ditches along like the side of the road next to the field, or sometimes some sort of like irrigation type ditch for a field, like a big field of crops.
Yeah.
You're supposed to get down as low as you can into the ditch. Like,
I thought you were supposed to pull out your cell phone and then look into the eye of the tornado. Are we trying to go viral or not?
You do that from the ditch, and then you okay. also you're if you could be crying the entire time, that will pop too. That would really go.
I was already crying in the car, so that would have been an easy stretch. But I made it home safely. The Prius made it home. And then on Friday, went to Des Moines, Iowa for the first time ever to do Teehees for Easter weekend. And I really love the space. It was it is a newer club. It opened in January of 2020. Perfect timing, as some would say, right before the yes. pandemic popped off. So they're, you know, they're still getting their feet on the ground, but really cool staff, really fun shows. And I recommend it if you're in Des Moines. It's like in this, it's downtown, but it's like a real hip place. You can tell it's like everything's new. There's hip restaurants and like outdoor bars and patios and yoga places. and gentrification. So
mm-hmm.
very nice. But yeah, I had fun. I had fun in Des Moines, and I came back Easter Sunday. He is risen. He do be rising. So
that I did is... I did like that tweet or whatever that post was that you did with the he do be rising. That was...
he do be rising. Now, if you're in a car for long enough, you will make yourself giggle at anything.
You'll write some material. You'll finally write a new joke. If you're in a long enough drive and you're out of podcasts and you're alone with your thoughts, a new joke will pop into your head. You know?
Yep. And it... At least it's topical and can be used for
every year.
2 day treat. Yeah. Every year.
That's perennial, my friend. That comes back around or annual or whatever that would be. But no, man, I've got a Halloween joke that will never be permanently retired. It will come out every Halloween.
I love it.
Man. Well, that sounds great. And I have emailed Teehees a few times about getting in there, and I've never been able to get in there, but I will redouble my efforts because if you had a good time out there, then I definitely want to try and check it out too.
You definitely should. I'll send them your way for sure.
Cool. So I'm trying to think where we were the last time. I don't think I had done Tacoma yet. I think I was in Portland, right? Was that
you
right? Were, yeah, I was in Portland.
You were
in Portland. Yeah. And so, yeah.
Fun things to say about Portland's.
I stand by all of those. The shit's grimy and things seem to be past a certain tipping point. And talking to a lot of friends who live in Portland, they all kind of feel the same way. Like it's reached a point of like, nobody knows what to do now, you know?
Yeah.
My Wednesday show at Mississippi Pizza, it was a hot one. It was packed out. Host is one of those shows where they have three hosts and all three hosts are on stage together at the beginning of the show, sort of riffing, which is something you see in bigger cities like Chicago and New York, you know,
the Knitting Factory, famous.
Yeah. And sometimes those are kind of clunky and it doesn't always work, but they did a good job of it. And it did not feel rehearsed. Like they had enough charisma and understanding of each other, not stepping on each other too often. Mm-hmm. And they always got somewhere funny with it. And so that's always impressive when you see three comics that are riffing and know the basic rules of improv and of like, you can't constantly try to talk and sneak like, oh, I got to get my tag in there, you know, like wait for your moment kind of thing. So I thought that was really well done on their part. It's packed out. It was a hot show. That was cool. And then I went to Tacoma and I had three of the best sets I've ever had in my life at the Tacoma Comedy Club.
He's back.
Yeah. He do be rising. And
hell yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting because I headlined a Thursday and then I headlined a Saturday matinee. And then and both of those were really the Saturday matinee particularly was like crazy good for being a 4 o'clock in the afternoon show on a Saturday. And it was pretty full. It wasn't packed, but it was very, very full. And it's a pretty big club. It's another like 300 seater or so. The Thursday headlining show was also good. I felt really good about it. My Friday feature sets, they were very quiet. They were very like, I would get laughs here and there, but they were very reserved. But then I sold a shit ton of merch.
That is so funny.
How bizarre. Yeah. And so then Saturday, I just decided, particularly coming off of the hot headlining matinee, when I went into the Saturday feature spots, Saturday evening feature spots, I was like, I'm just going to pretend, I'm going to act like I'm killing.
Yeah.
And I did way better in those feature sets because I think that they just kind of came with me, or maybe they're just a little bit more on board in general. But I out of the six shows, four of them were fantastic. The other two were fine. The club's great. I can't say enough good things about Bark Entertainment. And this is also another thing, Lacey, the GM there, fucking rad. They also seem to have a really good knack at hiring really, really good general managers who are cool.
Yeah.
And they don't stress you out. They're obviously there to support you as an artist. And they're also just kind of fun that if you do kick it with them for, you know, a couple minutes in the green room, it's a fun hang, you know?
Right.
So nothing but love for Tacoma Comedy Club for sure. That was great.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And I was featuring for Kyle Dunnigan, who I don't and he might still be, I don't know, but that's kind of how I knew of Kyle, was through Tig's stories. Tig would talk about him, like in the very famous Tig Notaro bit where she keeps running into Taylor Dayne.
Right.
Kyle's with her most of the time. And so he's name checked in that bit. So he was very nice and everything. And it was interesting because he's been a stand-up for a very long time, but then he really blew up in the last year or two on social media by doing impressions while using a face filter effect.
Interesting.
And so it comes back to the same thing that we talked about before on this podcast, which is this is an interesting case study in it, though, because this was a professional comedian and writer who had done a lot of things in comedy, but had never really blown up. And it's still that's still what it took for him to move into like these sort of headlining and having dedicated fans that are coming out to see him was this random social media thing that he did as a lark.
Right.
But,
that's
go ahead.
Yeah, you're probably going to address my question now. Sorry to cut you off.
I know, I'm going to get to the question, which is, did he do it on stage? Yes, he did. And was that the question?
That was the question.
Yeah. And so he had this whole setup where he had a keyboard on stage because he's a really great pianist, actually. And he did a couple of musical like joke songs that were very funny, actually, like really funny and fun. And then he also had his laptop up there on stage. And this face filter thing that he uses is it's a face filter to make you look like Joe Biden or to make you look like Donald Trump or Bill Clinton. Or
so
whatever.
Like a real person.
It's like a real person like face on your face. And then when you're talking, it's moving. And so he did that where there was a screen behind the stage and he had his laptop up there and he'd pull somebody up from the audience to play a game, essentially did kind of a game show. And then he is impersonating Biden, kind of hosting the game show sort of. I don't want to completely give it away, but that's essentially the construct of what was going on. And it was really interesting because, you know, it's a comedy club on a weekend. Not everyone there was there to see him. Some people just were like, we're just going to go to the comedy club tonight. We don't know who's there. But there were a lot of people who were there for him specifically, and mostly because they had seen this. And also he has like a weird YouTube show, I guess. And so they were dedicated fans of his. And man, when he's a couple of those shows, when he went into the face filter shit, people started losing their minds. Like they were hooting and hollering and wooing, and it was crazy. And the thing is, like his stand-up is good. Like, you know, depending on the show, he was sometimes doing 30, 40 minutes of stand-up before he ever got to the piano or the face filter thing, right?
Like they were losing their mind before, like
when
he introduced once it started.
Once he like went over there and started doing it, then they as soon as like the Joe Biden face came up on the screen, then they were like, oh fuck yeah, this is the thing that we love, woo, or whatever.
Yeah.
So it is just also another sort of reminder that it's all hopeless. No one gives a shit about your deeply interesting constructed narrative.
Oh man.
How clever the joke is that you wrote. There's not some sort of like shiny, there's not a set of car keys jangling that you can hang the bit on. They do not care.
Yes. I do not want your perspective. I would like a face filter of George Washington Carver doing an impression of Malcolm X in the 70s.
Yes.
I'm going to do Black history lessons as prominent Black figures imitating other Black figures.
I am on board with this, except Inception. That, yeah, except I'm already doing that exact bit. So if you cannot do it. Look, is it blackface if it's a face filter? I don't know.
This is a real chicken or egg situation for me. I don't know how I feel about this, but oh man, this is why you have to do it so we can answer these questions.
Yeah, this is our reboot of the Spike Lee movie Bamboozled. Like, this is the new modern age version, Bamboozled 2. We still don't know what the fuck we're doing or what's correct, and god damn it, entertainment is tricky.
Oh man, my face filters identify. Okay.
And so from those great hot Tacoma shows, I went to Alaska, to Anchorage, Alaska, and had 3.5 days basically of vacation time with Denise, where we did really rad vacation stuff, like we went on a glacier hike. We saw all these crazy wild animals and like the conservation center that's doing really, really cool work. And we went on a sea cruise out of Seward, Alaska, in like the sort of the Southern Bay. We saw dolphins and, or I'm sorry, porpoises and humpback whales and all kinds of shit. And it was rad. It was a super cool, great vacation. But then on Thursday I had to shift into comedy mode because this is my first festival show for the Alaska Before You Die Festival was that night. So I had to change gears.
So you went full vacation mode. Enjoy it.
Because the festival had actually started like on Monday and I on purpose did not tell anyone I was there.
Incognito Matt.
And the thing is, like, I did tell Kristen Lighty, who was also bringing her partner Rick with her. I said this is what I'm doing, and she was like, we're doing the exact same thing. They came in on Tuesday though, I think, and so we wound up taking the sea cruise with them. And we ran into Jake Matera, who was there with his wife, who had also done the exact same thing.
Are you guys afraid that you're going to like get asked to come and do a set
or something? Yeah, basically. Or that you're going to get guilted into the fact that you're not showing up to support the other shows. Because they had, you know, and when you submit to this festival, I don't know if it's when you submit or when you get accepted, but at some point you tell them what days you're available, right? Which is standard for any festival, you know? And I was like, oh, I'm going to be doing, and I talked to Denise. I was like, do you want to do vacation stuff before the festival or do we stay a couple of days after and do, and she was like, we'll do it before because it worked better for her work schedule.
Okay.
So I did not mark myself available for those Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday shows because of that, you know? Now, if I had, I would have gotten a lot more sets. That's the thing that I discovered is like, there were comics that were like, I'm coming for the whole week, you know, and like they're in it to win it. I don't think probably those Monday, Tuesday shows were great, if I was to guess. You know, some people said the Wednesday shows were really good. Some people had said that the Wednesday show, we're referring to the Wednesday night shows as the first real shows of the festival.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know exactly what they meant by that, because the other ones might have been just like local showcase or like little things here and there.
Right.
But I did have a comic say that his Wednesday night show was the best show that he had. And so my show Thursday was at this legendary bar called Coots. I did an 8-minute set on a showcase. It went pretty well. It was a pretty good crowd. And then the next night I had a 15-minute long set at a place that was not great for comedy. It was kind of a long shotgun room with like sort of bar seating on one side, like a long bar that ran the entire length of the room. So just stools against that. And then probably like a 6 to 8 foot gap between that and then high top tables that sat 2 people each along the other side of the wall. So it's the space that they had seats for 20 people that you could have had 60 people in there easily, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know if there was another hot show or something opposite us or something, but it, you know, was pretty lightly attended. But it was still was fine, you know? And it also was a great eye opening because I've seen this before, but it was a great, I'm glad I was there because I got to see a comic act like a real asshole. And it was one of those things, and I tweeted about this, but I saw a comic basically talk through the entire rest of the show. This comic was on the show.
Oh shit.
And they,
an actual festival comic.
Yeah. An actual festival comic performed on the show. Then went and sat down at one of those bar seats, right? And he sat down with some other comics that are literally right by where the quote-unquote stage is, where the performer is. So not even talking in the back of the room. Comics talk in the back of the room. It's still shitty.
Right.
But it's like you kind of at least understand it. They don't realize that how loud they're being, or they think, well, we're all the way in the back. This motherfucker was sitting 2 feet away from the performers and just having full conversations with these other comics, pulling them into conversations. And so it's one of those things where I'm trying to think who else. There were 2 other people in that room that I know for sure book things, right? Like I have some say in Limestone. I book a Don't Tell. These other 2 people book really, really good shows in their scenes. And this motherfucker's never playing any of those ever.
Yeah.
And it goes to one of those things where we've talked a lot about festivals and like how to get into it and what your tape should be. But also, if you get into a festival, the way you act off stage is just as important as the way you act on stage.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it's so much of more of a bigger deal at a festival, but like every show, like that's a lasting reputation. Obviously, like you said, there are industry people at festivals. There are people that book shows all over the country. It's one of the best parts about doing actually good festivals. And if you act like an asshole, you just alienated anyone that one saw it or that like reaches out and say, hey, yeah, have you heard of this guy? And you tweeted it and probably got people like, hey, man, who the fuck are you talking about?
I only had one person actually pull me aside and go, you want to talk about this? And I was like, not till after I leave the festival. I don't. And I was like, the thing is, I'll just be really real about this. Like, Jared and I had seen this exact same thing happen before at 208 Fest. It's the only festival Jared has ever gone to as visiting industry. Mm-hmm. And then I was performing in the festival. And so, you know, Jared is out there by himself and he didn't want to be bugged by people. So I was rolling with Jared at some other shows, right? We're watching shows. And we saw this guy fucking murder, gets up there, destroys. And we're both like, all right, that was good. And then literally he walks up the stage, almost the exact same thing, except he goes up to the bar and it wasn't other comics. He just loudly starts talking to the bartender during the rest of the show. And that guy, had he not done that, probably would have been in Limestone the next year.
Yeah.
And this person who I just watched do it in Alaska had submitted to Limestone this year and they had a pretty good score.
Yeah.
And they're not coming to Limestone. Now, they didn't have like a slam dunk home run score. Like, I'm not going to override the will of the panel. But as far as someone that we think of favorably and we kind of look at that person, we're like, oh, let's put them on the alternate list. Let's keep an eye on them, you know, for next year. Let's see what's going on, you know, that he's not getting that.
No. See what you get for being a chatty Cathy?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up or leave the room. Like, if you got to talk that bad, just like leave.
And there's so many other places that they could have gone, because this bar, like Coots and like a lot of places in Anchorage, they're huge buildings that have several different types of bars in them.
Yeah.
So he literally could have just gone out the doorway and been in an entirely different bar space, like pinball, arcade bar type space or whatever that nobody was in. They could have had a conversation out there, but he just, it was crazy. And then
so many things you can do.
Yeah. On a similar note, while we're handing out like life advice here for comics, there was another show at the festival that one of the comics goes up there and just is combative to the host, who was quite lovely, combative to the audience who was there and trying to be very supportive, combative shitting on the festival. And it's one of those, it was another one of those rooms that I was in the back of the room. And as this is going down, I'm like, let's see, there are three other bookers in here, promoters in here that are watching this person. And they had a terrible set. They never made it funny. It wasn't like a funny, playful, haha, shitting on it. It was like, came from like a real, the fuck is wrong with y'all? Why aren't you laughing? Well, you haven't told a fucking joke yet.
Oh,
you just got up there and started shitting on things. And so that's another one. That set, because not everybody saw the talky guy, the chatty guy, but that particular person set, the second one, the combative set, was kind of the talk of the festival. I had a couple other comics who didn't know that I was in the back of that room go, did you see that set from blah, blah, blah? Like other comics. And so they're in a major scene. They live in a major scene, and there were comics from their major scene there who are probably never going to give them the time of day or help them out.
Damn. Now,
because again, I don't know what the attitude was all about, man. It was crazy.
Watched a lot of Skankfest footage and decided that was going to be his new personality. Shit don't work everywhere.
It don't work everywhere. And, you know, I do want to talk about Skankfest for a second, because they just announced their Las Vegas lineup or whatever. But I think you've touched on something really, like, reading the room, man, is an important skill to have, and understanding the vibe of a festival at large is a big deal too, because this festival, like, you know, like David Bory was like the big headliner, and his show was packed out. Like there was a ton of people there, but it's still not a huge space. Like the main room at Coots, I don't know, maybe 60 people were there. You know, okay. It's like this festival has got like a lot of heart and it's very charming and the vibe is super good. Like Cass, who runs it, has obviously put a lot of herself into it. Everyone's just happy and excited because like everybody's like, holy shit, we're in Alaska. This is crazy, right? You know?
Yep.
So the energy and the vibe is so posy. It's so positive. Like I can't remember the last time I've been to a festival where just everybody just seemed very stoked, right? Yeah. And not in like, oh, this is a big deal, but just more like, we're having fun. Like, we're just going to go up on stage and have fun. And to misread that energy and not get on board. Because the show that this happened at was like a show that was almost all comics in the audience anyway. But everyone was there as like a sign of support. Like, yep, we're going to show up. I will say this. I did see tons of comics at a lot of the shows. Like, there was a lot of people. The people were like missing shows because they went on a cruise or they went to see the Northern Lights, or they were trying to do their touristy shit too when they could. But you saw most of the shows, there were at least a handful of comics that were not on the show that were just there to support. And so that vibe was very good. And this person, whew, yeah, it was wild. Go ahead.
That's it. That guy's going to have a tough time in this business. Like with longevity, like it's just you got to have that skill either naturally or develop it. Like you just have to
at least fake being nice. It's gonna even be better than what that was. I believe this was, I think this is a Cam O'Connor wisdom thing, which is be funny, be on time, be nice. If you can do two out of those three, you'll always work.
Yep.
And they might not even been on time. I don't know. They might have gotten oh for three on that one. I don't know.
Show up late. Like, what the fuck's your problem?
Man, it was wild. But I will say for comics listening, I do think this festival is worth submitting to. This is a thing that also came up because like we had some homies there, right? Scott Easton was there. Mm-hmm. Like Derek Sheen was there. Mm-hmm. Jake Matera, who already mentioned, you know. But I kind of ran a little bit with Derek and Kristen Lighty and Scott Eason, Bailey Pope and Jeff Greenspan. That's kind of the crew that I mostly hung out with.
Yeah.
Just by coincidence. Also, you know, I love fucking Scott, you know, and I love all those people. Jeff is kind of a newer friend, but, it was a good crew to run with, but it was also interesting because, you know, Scott and I have been doing this over a decade, and because he's out of Alabama and I'm out of the Midwest, we have a very different perspective than New York, LA based comics, right? Like we've been doing longer sets for a lot longer. We've done a lot more shows that weren't just mics and weren't grinding it out. You know, we've performed for actual human beings more often than we don't.
Right.
Which isn't always the case in those big cities, particularly if you're only a couple of years into comedy and it's just like you're performing for other comics and you're trying to figure it out. And, you know, every now and then you get on a good showcase, like a CYSK, you know, style. Like, yeah, it is a comic run showcase, but it's packed with actual paying customers. So some of the newer comics, as they were talking about how great the shows were. And if Cass is listening to this, I think your festival is beautiful and I think it's amazing. And I do not mean this in any way of disrespect, but it's like, I would not categorize any of the shows I saw as great.
Yeah.
I saw good shows, you know, but it wasn't. And I think it's one of those things where and at no point, at no fault of Cass's or the comics, I'm just talking about like the crowd response, like the turnout for certain shows. It's just like, we've been doing it for so long. We have such a higher expectation level of what's great. Right. These were all solid, rock solid and good. So I do suggest comics should go do it. I don't think you're going to have the most amazing sets of your life unless you're brand new in comedy.
Yeah.
But the overall experience is worth it. And they are good shows. They're not bad shows. I've definitely been to festivals that were straight up bad shows.
Yeah.
And this was not that. And I didn't see any shows that were like, just holy shit, this is terrible, you know? but I do want to, you know, there's always the glowing post festival post that everybody puts up, you know, and I have seen a lot of them, like they were amazing shows. I'm like, this is an old cynical way to look at it. And I understand that, but it's like, you know, and if those were great shows for that comic at their point in their career, then hell yeah, I'm glad they had that experience. But yeah, just as someone who's got a lot of miles under their belt, figuratively and literally, and then also perspective wise of, like, you know, being a promoter and booker and running a festival and stuff like that, I look at it from a lot of different angles. So, you know, I do think people should submit to it. You're going to have a good time. You will have good shows, yeah. But you know, it's like any festival. You should temper your expectations, you know?
For sure. I mean, yeah, get your adjective game together, people.
Yeah.
With the hyperbole.
Yeah.
Rule number one.
Well, and I will say that also, and this might just get enough people submitting anyway, is that one of the sponsors was a dispensary, and you got a free swag bag of weed, which I just gave mine to somebody else because I don't smoke. Apparently the weed is real good, and the swag bag amount is like, this is a lot for the amount of time that we're here. And so, you know, depending on how much you smoke and what your tolerance is or whatever, but, you know, someone who is a fairly regular, you know, weed enthusiast was like, yo, I thought I was gonna take a nap, and I woke up the next afternoon, like, that's how strong the shit is.
That's so hilarious.
That may have also played into all these glowing reviews, just so you know.
Yeah, the audience is tempered because all the comics gave away the free weed. And I did have a comedy question for you, logistic wise. You came off of doing headlining sets to feature sets, and then you had some time off for vacation. Mm-hmm. And then you said your first set was an 8-minute set. Is that like preferable? Is that a preferable amount of time when you're like jump starting the car again? For me, I'm like, I want like a 20-minute set to dust off the cobwebs, but let me work my stamina back up. 8 minutes feels very short.
Well, I think this is another thing of like perspective and where we are. No, I would rather never do an 8-minute set. I would always want to do 20 or more, because, and we've talked about this, I think, before, the stage that you and I are at, and with as much material that we have and being used to headlining fairly regularly, or at the bare minimum, when we go out to do comedy, we're featuring, doing less than that is weird. It feels like you barely got into anything. Like I felt like my 8-minute set was like the very definition of a who gives a shit set.
Yeah. You know?
Cause yeah. I wasn't going to do my mom's dying material in 8 minutes.
You can't,
you know? And, you know, so I'm like, here's just some jokey jokes, you know? And I worked on a relatively new bit. I did it there and kind of like that, you know, I'd been doing it on this run. So it's got structure. It's got, you know, I know how to do it and how to get out of it strongly, but I played around with the middle of it, you know, the new bit. So no, I would rather only get, I mean, going that, I mean, far, for, having more than one set's set, good. Yeah. For had, a festival. Yeah.
You had a 15-minute set, which I feel like is not normal at a festival, right, either.
Yeah. Well, the thing is also, yeah, so there were different levels of comedians, and I was brought in as one of the features. And then there were other comics who came in who only had shorter sets, but I feel like they had more shorter sets, and that might've just been because they were available earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
So it might've been a situation where everyone wound up getting about 20 to 25, you know, and gotcha. Then it's just how it was divvied up. I certainly wouldn't have wanted to just have one show, right, you know, that was only 20 minutes. I think the 15 and 8 was a good call on their part as far as how you do time management.
Yeah.
To make it more valuable for going all that distance. But no, I'm gonna be in Denver tonight doing the new talent showcase at Comedy Works, and that's like a short set, and it's just like, I'm just gonna go up and have fun. I'm not gonna be able to get any real work done. Yeah. You know?
It's like you make a set list just to like wrap your mind around that frame of time, even though it might not be what ends up happening on stage, because it's man, that light comes so quick. It's just like, all right, I'm getting a rhythm, and then light. It's like, oh shit, let me wrap this up. I just, when you said 8-minute set, I got goosebumps.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a thing too, like when I do the attic open mic, you know, and I usually close it, and there's a lot more leeway. I can do whatever I want. I still am not going to go long and, you know, be an asshole about shit, you know, but I will literally just take up there what is one or two ideas.
Yeah.
Like, I won't try to structurally do 5 minutes. I'm like, I'm going to go up with these two ideas I want to work on, and we'll just see what else happens. And I'll just be in the moment, and then I will get off stage when it feels right.
Yeah.
You know,
that is the difference though. Like the mic versus a room full of your peers that don't get to see you very often. They're like, hey, what's Matt up to in 8 minutes?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the sort of thing too, where, I'm at a point now where that I don't think about that. I think I've kind of gotten to this point where I just don't care even what other comics think. Not to be a dick about it. You know, it's always nice when a comic comes up to you and gives you a specific compliment about a joke or whatever, and you want to do well, but I'm not in comedy to make other comics laugh. You know,
you have passed the final test, Matt. You are a black belt now. You're the one true master.
No, man, I want to do well, but I also know a room full of comics is like a different vibe. And so I just go up to like the 15 minutes. Like, I did talk about my mom dying, and I did talk about a couple other bits and that I wanted to do. And, you know, but I still also did some silly shit, and it still was more about that one because it was like more sparsely attended and like a weird space to me. That was like, and I was the first one up after the host on that show.
Yeah.
And I was just like, no, I'm going to just show you, like, I'm going to do my thing. And I've gotten older, and this is something just like in think in the last year or so, and this honestly might be a reaction to my special and my ongoing feelings about it. But I really, really am identifying with that George Carlin quote, that he does not think about the audience.
Yeah.
He's like, let's just get this straight. I'm not trying this out on you. He's like, I'm here for me. You're here for me. You don't really play into it. No one's here for you. He's like, no one's here for you. He's right. Like, to be honest, you don't really play into it.
Yeah.
And I'm getting more and more that way, which is the thing that also Stuart Huff had kind of talked about early on, is just like, you got to just, I'm going to do my thing, and you can, you know, and I'll make it as funny as I possibly can. And it's on the audience to get on board or not. And, you know, obviously when it's your job and it's your paycheck and all that kind of shit, you can kind of shift gears and try to like ease them into that thinking a little bit, you know, but at a festival where I'm not getting paid and I've already quote unquote won because I got selected to be in the festival. Nah, it's just, to me, it's just, I'm just going to go up and do whatever I want. And I was talking to a comic that I met for the first time that weekend that was hitting it off with, that had a really fun energy. And we were commenting on how a few of the comics did the exact same set every single show that they had at the festival. And we were both, and they were just like, yo, I tried a brand new joke. And I was like, yeah, I was like, to me, doing the exact same 7 minutes or whatever they did verbatim every single show at a festival, like, it's not JFL.
Right.
It's like, you should be just having the most fun on stage that you possibly can at this thing.
Right.
You know, is the way that I was looking at it in a couple other comics. And you know, and I think I use the same opener on both of my sets because it's like, all right, this just gets it going, you know. But just, I saw some couple of comics literally do, this is my tight 10. And it makes me wonder, is like, do you not have anything else? Is that all you have, those 10 minutes of jokes and that's it? And there's nothing, you're okay just Xerox copying that set over and over again?
I wouldn't doubt that that was the case for the guy that got pissed off and was just shitting on everybody. It's like two sets into the festival. He's like, what the fuck's wrong with you guys?
Maybe. Also, I love it that you assume it's a guy, but
I am very misogynistic. And you're whenever someone does something terrible like that, I assume that it's a guy.
That's the opposite of misogynistic, isn't it? You're a feminist. You're a hardcore feminist. You assume anything bad had to have been done by a guy.
Yeah. And that's the story that I have in my head, the visual. I will not change it regardless of any new information that comes in.
All right. So anyway, one thing, we do have a question of the week we need to get to. But also, I did want to say, I want to talk about the Skankfest lineup. And I don't know if you saw it, but Roseanne Barr is going to be at Skankfest in Las Vegas. I know you're a big fan.
When are the dates?
Buy your tickets now. Dates. Buy your ticket.
It's probably sold out already.
Probably. Yeah. Oh,
shit. Skankfest. This is like every time I see like a comic I like is doing that, I'm like happy for them. Like, I don't shit on anybody for going to do shows at this point in my career, but like,
It's like,
I always hear some shit like it's just shock value.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like, again, like, we have friends that are on this lineup. You know, a couple of our friends are in this lineup, and, you know, good for them. But, you know, you can't put your moral choice on anyone else.
Right.
It's the same conversation we've had before about, like, I'm not going to fault anybody who goes and opens for Louis. I wouldn't do it. But if they're going to do it, that's between them and their God or whatever. You know, like, fine, whatever.
Their God is Louis.
Their God is Louis.
This is, it's a, point I know. Or is there? I like a lot.
Also, Brian Callen is on the lineup. So, ladies, cover your drinks and bring your bear mace.
Man, they are like, Cosby is right there for them. There's a lot of people I respect in this lineup too.
Is Cosby on there?
I do not. You're breaking see the up Cos. A little
bit. You didn't. Bill Cosby's not on there. They did not add Cosby. That'll be next year, I'm sure. All right. Surprise, anyway, so in. Yeah. So just to recap. Oh, is that what it says? Oh,
no.
Probably. I bet Louis does do a drop-in or something. I bet that happens.
They're talking about your drinks.
Yeah. Just to wrap up, though, Tacoma Comedy Club, absolutely fantastic. Doe Comedy Show in Portland, absolutely fantastic. Alaska Before You Die, a ton of fun. And I will say the overall experience, absolutely fantastic. If you take the whole thing and the vibe and the energy and the love that there is on display, then yes, I'm going to fantastic. So just hell to sum that up. All right, let's get into this week's question of the week. This came to us through the email account from Trent Babb. That's with two B's, actually three, one in the front, two in the back. So here is, first of all,
that was sexual.
Was it? Okay.
Isn't it?
I was waiting for you to go, I'm in, but you didn't. All right.
Well, save it for the post-show credits, maybe.
Okay. So they actually, before they get to the question of the week, they actually had a really good comment on the last episode where we tried to answer John Handcuff's question about the best depictions of stand-up in... Trent Babb says the absolute best one that he's ever seen is an episode of the new Twilight Zone series, the Jordan Peele one. But it's basically follows an amateur comedian struggling to get laughs. But once he speaks about a person in his life, the laughs explode. Then that person erased from existence because it's Twilight Zone.
Ah,
it's a fantastic metaphor about what it takes to be a successful comedian. I don't know if it's a direct metaphor. Like, I don't know. In order to make it, you got to give up your life and the people closest to you just to please strangers. First of all, I love Twilight Zone, old school. And I have seen one of the new ones, but not this particular one. If I'm not mistaken, I think the comic in this one is played by old Laserfingers himself. What's his name?
Laserfingers?
Yeah, Camillo Gianni.
Is that right?
Because he's in that... He's in that Marvel movie where he got all buff and then he just shot lasers from his fingers. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think Male is the comic in this, I think, if I remember watching the commercials for this before. And so I would like to check this out. But I'm sure it's dope. I'm sure it's done really well because it's Jordan Peele. But I don't think you necessarily do need to cut off everyone around you to make it in comedy. I mean, Jim Gaffigan's a pretty good example. The fact that he's still married to the same woman. In fact, she helps write his jokes. Like, I think you can have a balance. You know, I know a lot of people, their entire social circle becomes the comedians that they're hanging out with and they're doing mics, and they may lose touch with other friends that they have. But that is not a necessity. They could put in the work to still go hang. No, you disagree?
No, I agree. No.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. No. Okay. Yeah. You can still put in the work to maintain.
Sorry, baby. Still... I'm going out to do my 8 minutes. So
yeah.
I know you said this would be the last time you'd leave me, but I got to go to Alabama. I got to do this, son. Yeah, no. I agree with you, man.
I think you can balance life. You have to want to, you know, you have to want to stay in touch with these other people in your life that aren't part of the comedy world. You have to put in the work like any relationship, but that's not even their question. This is Trent's question, which is a great one. When do you sit down and grade your previous sets? Is it that night or a designated day? Also, how in depth do you grade yourself? Word for word? Would love any tips. Thanks, Matt and Dwight. Thank you for the question, Trent. This is a fantastic question. Dwight, yeah. Do you want to start with your process and talk about it?
Sure. I grade my sets as soon as they're done. And then I wish I was better about this, but I would like to at least listen to certain jokes the next day when it's still fresh, especially if I can get on stage and like try it out again that night. Grading sets as like a practice isn't something that I do all the time. It's typically when I'm working on something new, just because I have I have the sets that I've been doing for a couple years. But as I start to build out more material, it starts to happen more and more frequently, especially if I'm trying to work on tags or think of tags or really build out the set. Like I was when I did the special, it was like, all right, let's really dive in. It's like, especially with like going through old clips, it's like, God damn, that was not as good as I thought it was. I don't really judge sets as a whole as much as I do jokes, I guess. Mm-hmm. That's the process. Well,
I think judging the individual jokes is kind of at the core of what Trent's talking about. But also, like, I do think you start looking at sets when they are starting to be reflective of the new hour, when you're leading up to a taping or a taping of something like a half hour special or whatever. Then you really are thinking about set as a whole, and then you're judging it as a collective piece. But for most comics, it is really more about the individual jokes and a rough overall, like, how did that set do? And then let's actually like tweak out and look at the jokes. I will be completely honest and say that I am very bad about doing this and have been for several years. Where I kind of like do it more intuitively. I will say that from my early years of really going back through my sets and really examining, and you know, every set really meaning a lot, getting up about joke writing and all that kind of stuff. I did follow a pretty basic rule that I don't know where I first heard this, but I would never listen to it the night of. You always want to sleep on it and then listen to it at least the next day, if not 2 days later, because you will no longer be in the same emotional state as you were when you performed it. If you come off stage and you think you had a terrible set and you listen back to it, you're going to still think it's a terrible set. Or vice versa, if you think you crushed and you listen back, you're like, yeah, I did crush. But in the cold light of morning, mm-hmm. you're going to be way more objective and you're not going to be in that same emotional space. And so then it's usually the first one. Usually you think you ate shit. And you're like, that wasn't that good. It was super clunky and weird. And then you watch that clip a week later. You're like, it was fine. What the fuck is wrong with me? You know, like, it was totally fine.
Yeah.
So as far as an overall thing, I think some distance before you start to grade them, so to speak, is important. And it follows the sort of the Hemingway rule of write drunk, edit sober, where mm-hmm. he would get drunk and free write essentially. And then in the morning when he's sober and drinking coffee, then he's going back and he's editing. Right. And I feel like that sort of idea is the same, that you need to have distance from the creative, or in this example, the performance itself. You need to have that, and before you can really be analytical about it.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't really have a set way that I do it. I will use an example. There's a joke that when I came up with the premise from the jump, I thought, this is a little clunky. I don't know if I even want to try to attempt this. And I told the premise to a comic and they're like, there's something there. You should try it. And I have been trying it off and on stage, and I'm grading it pretty tough. It's not doing great. And it's a little bloated is the problem. There's too many parts to it. And so I'm really starting to weed out and change sections of it. But I don't do the thing that some comics do where they go through and they color code, you know, where they're like,
I've seen that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, like I said up top, I'm pretty lazy about it. To me, it's more of like a feeling and an intuitive thing of like when a joke feels right. And because, you know, we're lucky enough that we get up so often and for such long periods of time that we get to do a lot of jokes. And so particularly, you know, if I'm headlining, you know, and doing an hour, in this new, if I'm headlining for an hour, like I did in Tacoma, I probably have 20 minutes or so that's new from the last album. And, you know, I'm still trying to do well because I'm the headliner and I'm trying to get paid and trying to come back to this club again. But those are all still in flux because they're not done. They're not burned. They're not buried. They're not old jokes that I'm just doing to fill the time and because I want to do well. Those are always in flux and I'm changing them set to set, like slightly here and there, maybe the order of it, you know, all that kind of stuff. To me, it's more of an active, ongoing thing in my head than a, this performance of the joke is tied to this specific time and space, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely.
It has to be more of an overall feeling of this is too wordy. I need to clean this up. This is too, you know, this is like the one joke I was using as an example. It will clearly work if I just make it a short joke. If I just make it a short joke, it's going to hit. And I've been trying to build it into a bigger chunk. And it just, I don't think it has the legs for it. And I've tried and I've rewritten it a couple times to give it more structure and try to give it that body and that legs. And it's just not going to hit. So for me, again, grading is a way that a lot of comics do it, but I don't look at it that way as more as when it just feels right. It just clicks in. I'm like, that one's done now.
Yeah, that's interesting. I believe you need to be protective of your material and from yourself and from the audience. So you know, we never want to get into a habit of like blaming the audience. But sometimes it's just a shit audience, and that's not going to give you a accurate grade on, especially new bits. You don't want to lose confidence in new bits that you're working on across, you know, a couple of weeks. So sometimes it'll be like I'm going through sets and I was like, oh, I had low energy in this set, maybe because the set before this joke didn't do well, I didn't have the confidence behind it. So I definitely like the aspect of sleeping on it. There will be some times where I have two shows in a night and I'll just like sneak out to the parking lot and put my headphones in just to check like wording or like reaction to a joke and see if I can like tweak something before the next show, just to get that like rapid fire immediate. But yeah, I'm not as diligent as like, all right, sitting down and listening to my previous night set, because one, I hate the sound of my voice, and two, I'm like, I can just edit this on the fly. I want to leave room for the creative juices to keep flowing. I feel like if I had listened to a joke too many times before it's finished, that'll be how I remember it.
Right. And it gets locked into your brain that way. It becomes set. Yeah.
It's just harder for me to like come up with tags and stuff. Cause I, you know, overkill it. I try to, yeah, it's like listening to a song over and over and over again. Like it's funny, but I want it to be better, but now it's locked into my brain.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I think first of all, your idea of doing it between sets, like if you have a second set the same night, I think that's good. And again, there are comics who are way more diligent about this. You know, I remember being so impressed early on with John Roy, who would walk off stage into the green room, open up his notebook and make detailed notes, not even having to listen to it, because he just was so focused and he knew what happened. And so he did that after every single set. He was really a workman about it. And if that works for you, then that's great. But I am in the same boat as you, that it will become that version. It will be harder for me to crack it open and keep it alive on stage and sort of write it on stage, keep writing it on stage, if it is constantly drilled into my brain.
Right. And we're so, both conversationalists.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Yeah. It's a different thing if you are a one-liner comic, if you're doing very structured jokes. But both you and I have moved into that area where there are definite setup punchline jokes in there, but it's all obscured through conversation.
Yeah.
To where it just sounds like we are just telling you the story of our lives on stage. And when we do it right, you don't smell that this is a setup.
Right.
You definitely don't smell that this punchline's coming. It's all just kind of wrapped in the character of our delivery You know, and the personality of us, you know. And so if you are a straight up joke machine, then yeah, like every little word really changes and it hinges on those kind of things. But being a conversational style person, the basic idea is more important than the actual verbiage. Now, that being said, getting the verbiage right to maximize it and to make it as punchy and as effective as possible is still the main goal. And it's, but it's less, the entire thing doesn't hinge on it as much. You're going to get a solid B with just the premise and just the punchline. And then you can get that to an A and an A plus if you really tweak the vocabulary of it. But again, if we listen to it in the B version or maybe C plus version of it over and over again, and it becomes the thing, then we're never going to be able to get it to that A plus level. We have to be able to let it breathe and live in a loose conversational style. So not the style for everyone for sure, but definitely I think this is a thing that most people move towards too. The longer they're doing this is, you know, I was just talking to someone about, you know, I'm proud of my second album. I think Bloodmouth is a good record. And I had to re-listen to all this shit when the Sirius XM, everybody getting their shit pulled off and all that kind of stuff. There was a whole thing where we had to redo our catalogs. It's the whole thing. But I had to go back and listen to my old records. And the second one, I am very proud of it, but it still feels, I mean, I'm getting into being conversational, but I can still hear this me presentation of like, this is a joke. I'm now telling you a joke.
Right.
Here is the setup, which Midnight Nachos is not that at all. It's Midnight Nachos as a conversation. This is my life. I'm telling you about my life and things that I've seen. And then it's just one long flow, you know, even if as I'm changing topics, it's just driven by me being a storyteller.
Yeah. It's a great movement it's a great growth moment. You got to leave room for jazz, baby. Let jazz happen.
Yeah, that's what I've always said about your jokes. It's about the punchline. And thank you so much for that question. Obviously, you know, this is just two comics takes on it, a lot of different ways to do it. I wouldn't fault anyone for being diligent and listening to their sets and really trying to like taking it under the microscope, but just don't let that practice override the creativity and the fluidity of being free in the moment as a performer. You know, it should be a balance of both for sure. If you're going to do.
Hell yeah. I agree. Couldn't agree more. That's a fucking awesome question. Thank you for that.
Yeah. If anyone out there would like to send us a question, we would love to take a stab at it on a future episode of the podcast. You can do that at mattanddwight@gmail.com, mattanddwight@gmail.com. Shoot us a message there and we will get to it on a future episode of the podcast. Speaking of which, I think we're just about out of time. Where are we at on time, Dwight?
We're good. We're cruising. Okay. Yep. We are wrapping it up. So, okay. Matt, you want to tell us where you will be for the foreseeable future? Keep it to 7 days.
Yeah, you don't like when I do the multiple weeks out? You don't
You can do it. Go ahead, then. Go ahead.
Let's see. Oh, I'm now realizing I need to update my website. I just went to my website to look at it. Still showing last month's shows. So I believe this is going to post on Wednesday the 12th. If that is the case, you can catch me that night at the Comedy Fort in Fort Collins, Colorado. I will be closing out their contest, doing a little longer set at the end of that as they tabulate the scores. Always a good time at the Comedy Fort. And the following night, I'll be at Black Apple Cider in Springdale, Arkansas.
Hell yeah.
Can't wait to see Stetson. And I think Steph is still there. I know that she's moving to Colorado, but hopefully I'll still get to see Steph too as I come through and do that show. And then the following week, Washington, Indiana on Thursday the 20th. And then 21st and 22nd, you can catch me headlining Wiley's Comedy Joint, Dayton, Ohio. I'll have ticket links for all those up in my link tree and on my social media bios and on my website tomorrow. Maybe. I've been driving a lot. I drove since Sunday night when I landed at the airport. I've driven 1,250 miles.
That's too many.
Yeah.
That's too many.
We're not even done yet.
Damn, dude. My goodness.
I'm gonna go to the coffee shop and update this fucking website for sure. What about you, Dwight? What do you got coming up?
On Thursday, April 13th, I will be at Googman House Brewing at 7:30. Hosting a fantastic lineup of comedians and drinking some craft beer, and then on the 14th and 15th, maybe, I do not know yet, I have not confirmed this, but maybe at Stand Up Live in Huntsville,
nice.
Alabama. Would love to see my man Scott Easton, as we mentioned him on the podcast already. And that's it. That's it. And that's what I got going on this weekend. My show here in Indianapolis, and then maybe some traveling. We'll see.
All right.
I'd like to keep you on your toes.
Yeah, hopefully you get that lined up. I mean, I know that would be a big one to go down there. And I think we probably got some listeners in Huntsville, probably. If nothing else, we got Scott from Behind the Bits. He'll come out and see you. I'm sure. thank you everybody for checking out Matt and Dwight Just Might. We do appreciate it. We are very close to being kicked out of the podcast community, though, because we have not been telling you to like and subscribe and leave 5-star reviews. We have not been doing that, and we did get a formal letter from the podcast community, from their legal team, and they said we're no longer going to be able to podcast if we don't start telling you to do that. So please keep us on the air.
So yeah,
kind of the air. Yeah,
smash that subscribe button, baby.
Smash that subscribe button. Do all the things. Tell a friend about it. We appreciate you listening, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Matt and Dwight Just Might. What's the tagline, Dwight?
Oh, leave room for jazz, because it's not blackface if you use a filter.
I'm in.